would hope so, Kelly said. Unless you're not half as clever as you or I believe.
Can we move ahead already?
Tarkon said, hunching his bony shoulders.
At this rate, Dante's going to miss the birth of his own grandchildren.
A few of the council laughed. A few more frowned or glanced away as if they'd just caught a whiff of an unexpected latrine.
Then I'll cave to public opinion and keep this brief.
Callie placed his palms on the table, long white hair spilling past his ears.
It's time we go to war, too.
I knew it, Wint said, head wagging. Callie, Cav said in his modulate tones, with all due honor to yourself and your office, I wonder if your motives aren't unfortunately confused.
Callie laughed, high and reedy.
Is that a very roundabout way to ask about Gabe?
If you'd rather put it that way.
For those of you who haven't pried into my personal history, here's the short of it. When I was exiled by Samarand, I left for Malin. In Malin, I befriended a monk named Gabe, an Auron. Thoughtful fellow, even by the standards of monks. We kept in contact through letters and the like. It was through his help that I was eventually able to reclaim my place here. In exchange, I promised I'd see what I could do for his people.
That's what this is about, Wint said. Paying off your old debts to one forgotten friend?
Callie impaled Wint on his green-eyed gaze.
My conscience isn't deep nor demanding. I could have bought it off with a sack of silver to a needy clan. But I looked, and I thought, and I tested. It turned out I liked the Norren. I like the value they place on thought and craftsmanship of thought. They are worth preserving. They are worth fighting for. There is no reason, no matter what the king has to say about debts of bondage, and that the Norren's ability to carry so much weight is proof of their place as our two-legged donkeys, for them to be enslaved and subjugated by the whim of a king.
Except that he can make them, Somber said, eyes darting around the table.
There's no good reason. None that fits Aran's scheme of justice.
Now that's a curious evocation, Wint said. I think one could rightly argue Aran is all but unconcerned with earthly justice.
What are you talking about? Dante said. The parable of Aran's mill isn't just the story of how a disturbance in the heavens made him grind nether instead of ether. It's an express metaphor for justice. Just as the heavens are flawed, so too is the earth. But while the nether may be flawed and unstable compared to the purity of ether, it's ours to shape, and so is our fate.
And fate will be the operative word, Cav said. If we actively resist, Modigan's second tour will take him to Narashtavik. The Norren won't provide enough resistance to do more than slow him down. It's just a short march from their hills to our coast. We'd be lucky to make it through the winter.
Callie laughed humorlessly.
I see.
Is this a joke to you?
Oh, I'm laughing at myself. It seems I've failed again.
Callie replaced his hands on the table and leaned forward, spine crackling.
This time, I failed to make myself clear. We're not here for a discussion, and this isn't a vote.
Cav's brow crinkled.
Then just what is this about?
To tell you where we're going next. To war.
Chapter 17. The ensuing discussion followed a predictable cycle of outraged revolt, exasperated skepticism, and bitter resignation. Dante sat back, allowing the combatants to exhaust themselves. Callie didn't need his support. Callie was the High Priest of Aran, the ultimate authority of both the sealed citadel and all Narashtovik. Barring violent revolt then and there in the council's chambers, his word was law. Narashtovik would fight alongside the Norren. Not just yet, of course. Neither group had a proper fighting force for one. For another, there remained the chance, however vanishing, that nothing would come of this at all, and that Modigan and some Norren High Chieftain would glare at each other from across the field, fling down their swords, and rush to embrace each other, all misdeeds forgotten. Better to delay the formal announcement that Narashtovik was ready to make hate until after the other participants had committed themselves. In the meantime, they would set the stage. Ollivander would return east to muster the townships, then head to the mountains beyond to see if any of the free peoples cared to war against Gask in return for ongoing recognition of their independence from Narashtovik, which, if the Norren prevailed, would declare independence of its own, creating a buffer state between Gask and the free tribes. Cav could harness his deep reservations towards their involvement by travelling to Setevan to petition the king and any other nobles who'd listened to cool down and seek a peaceful solution. Several councilmen and women would tour cathedrals and temples on both sides of the border, pressuring local priests to petition their own mayors and baronets to provide political opposition. Somber still had links to a de facto spy network he'd belonged to earlier in life, and would leverage those for whatever they were worth. Most of the elderly members would remain in Narashtovik with Kali to maintain home rule. And Dante, naturally enough, would travel to the territories to conduct forward operations.
"Specifically, you're going to organize the tribes," Kali told him once the council had hammered the major details flat,
a process that wound up spilling over into the next day. And the last of the other members finally vacated the chambers.
"Inasmuch as such a thing is possible, anyway. I recognize that bringing those squabbling bands together is like trying to fill a bucket with water scooped by hand when the bucket is also made out of water. But whatever hope we have at this point rests on uniting them, however temporarily."
Dante smiled. "Why do I always get the jobs that can't be done?"
"Because it's funny to watch you try. Furthermore, you not only have extensive experience with the clans, but with the method I plan to help unite them with."
"Loons?" Kali looked up.
"Precisely. I put together several more while you were gallivanting around the country. Not enough for all clans, but it should be enough to spark a confederation."
"You're just going to hand them out?"
"No," Kali said. "You are."
Dante twisted his sideburn between his fingers. "How are we going to keep them from falling into enemy hands? Right now, they're about the only advantage we've got."
"Since I am so very clever, I have already solved that plan. For one thing, I have made them to resemble Norren earrings, the sort of thing any Gascon blueblood will dismiss as tribal bric-a-brac. Secondly, I'm only sending you with one of each pair. The others will stay with me. Even if one of the loons winds up in the hands of a sorcerer who recognizes artificery when he sees it, and even if he is then able to threaten, trick, or torture a Norren chief into confessing what the loon is used for, he'll be navigating with half a map."
"I see."
"You're not convinced?"
"We figured out how to make them easily enough, didn't we? The court has nethermancers of its own."
"Only the ones who couldn't hack it on the council," Kali scoffed. "Anyway, if this is our lone advantage, logic demands we leverage it to the hilt. Start in the borderlands. Once the clans there are working in tandem, then you can see about hitching the inland clans to the team."
It was already mid-afternoon, but there was no time left to waste. Dante dispatched servants to ready horses and provisions. Blaze received the news of their latest trip with a broad grin.
"Another ride into the wild, huh? Can't wait."
"What are you so happy about?" Dante said.
"We'll be out of the rain and killing Setevite bastards. What's not to be happy for?"
Dante alerted Lyra and Morn, then returned to Calais to update his maps with the latest news of riots, raids, and skirmishes. There had been more fighting on the outskirts of Dolandon. He planned to head there, rendezvous with the clans who'd been making forays into the burning city, hand out some loons, and offer whatever personal aid they could provide, and then continue south, all the way to the fringes of Tatonin, where they could enlist Whale and the Clan of the Golden Field to act as the centerpiece of the region. That was the plan, anyway. If Modigan gathered his troops slowly enough, they might even see it through. Kelly brought out a sack filled with carved bone earrings. Groomsmen brought around the horses. Morn considered his thick-legged mount with his usual pensiveness.
"I think I've travelled more in the last 2 months than I did in any year with the Nine Pines."
They rode out an hour before sunset. The city soon faded into the haze of rain. The rain took 2 more days to disappear, chased away by a blustery wind that blew itself out overnight, leading to a clear morning just this side of warm. They each had a spare horse, and switched them out every few hours. At their pace, they would reach Dolendon in a couple more days. They never made it. That afternoon, smoke bloomed to the southwest. By the time they reached the town, the fires had burnt themselves out, but the film of smoke remained, seething up from the scorched shells of houses. Dante checked his map, but it made no mention of the town. By his reckoning, they were some 10 or 20 miles from the border into human lands. Towering figures flung buckets of water on the smoldering coals. Cave homes stared down from the hills. Dante and the other 2 humans drew dark looks on their way to the relatively untouched north end of town, but they were saved, perhaps, by the presence of Morn, unbranded, unshackled, even armed with a sword and bow of his own. Foot and hoofprints dried in the muck of the streets. Sobs filtered through broken shutters. Arrows poked from the ground and the walls of unburnt homes. Blood crusted the stones of the main road. The first undamaged inn they passed was closed, but the second had its doors wide. Inside, a handful of Norrin sat in tired silence, soot griming their nails and wringing their eyes. Behind the bar, a dour woman watched them with open hostility. Her hair was drawn back in a bun so large and round it resembled a second head.
"What happened here?" Dante said.
She gave him one look.
"Jane must have left the stove on again."
"Oh yeah," Blaise said. "Cooking King's soldiers' surprise again?" The woman almost smiled.
"It has a way of flaming up."
"Who resisted?" Dante said. "Townsfolk?"
"Wandering do-gooders."
"A clan? Which one?"
"Of them."
It took Dante a moment to realize that wasn't a foreign Norrin word. His temper flared.
"It's critical we speak to the clan. We're here to help them fight back."
The woman glanced between the 4 of them.
"Quite a host you've brought, too. The king will be running scared in no time."
Dante crossed his arms. While he composed himself, Morn gave the woman a small smile and a smaller nod.
"We'd like to speak to the chief. If that can be arranged, we'll be here in town for the next few days."
"No, we won't," Dante said. "We can't waste time here when Dolendon's being overrun by—"
"Yes, we will."
Morn turned to him and bent down until their eyes were level.
"We came here to answer need. Look at this town. Is there any question that it is in need? If we leave without helping, haven't we declared there are some who aren't worth saving?"
Dante nodded jerkily. The woman watched them go, motionless as a grave pillar. Morn marched them back to the burnt-out rows of houses on the south side of town. The gazes of the locals were as cold as the sunset. Wales carried down a hoof-churned side street. Morn led them to another inn where the tables had been piled along one wall. On the floor, Norrin lay head to toe, groaning and bleeding, some unconscious,
tended to by silent men and women bearing bandages and rags. As Morn stepped inside, the tallest Norrin Dante had ever seen arose from the wounded, detoured to a wall to pick up a chair, and stopped a few feet from the door, chair cocked back in one hand as easily as Dante would brandish a torch. Morn nodded at Dante.
"This man is a healer. Step outside."
The Norrin's voice was as low as a bear's.
"Continue stepping until all you can see are empty hills."
Morn advanced a single step.
"Take my head if he harms one soul."
The man drew back his head. A drop of blood slid from his hand and spattered the floor.
"Kneel, then, your face to the wall, and speak to Joson Joe if one word's been a lie."
Morn turned and knelt along the wooden wall, eyes closed, hands folded behind his back. The towering Norrin grabbed Dante's neck with his free hand and half-carried him across the room to a Norrin whose brown hair was matted to her head by blood and sweat. Her face was ashen, twitching. The man crouched down and unwrapped a blood-soaked rag from around her middle. A rope of grey-pink intestines oozed from a gash in her stomach. Dante inhaled with a hiss. The man's hand ground to the muscles of his neck. Dante reached for his knife. The hand clasped his throat, crushing it closed.
"I can help,"
Dante gasped.
"Please."
The strangling pressure eased. Dante coughed, massaging his throat. Once his coughing had settled, he cut a quick line on his left arm. Shadows flocked to the gleaming blood. He balled them in his hand and lowered his palms to the woman's blood-slick belly.
"Water,"
Dante muttered. Footsteps plodded between the moaning wounded. Dante pushed the loop of intestine back inside the woman's feverish body and held it in place with a firm hand. The nether flowed from him to her, seeking torn flesh, spurting veins. Dante took long breaths to fight the dizziness that still seized him when faced with the worst of wounds, particularly those of the gut and their hot, sour stink that threatened to close his throat as firmly as the Norrin man's grip. The woman barked in pain, head contorting to one side. Boots clumped across the floor. Dante's dizziness evaporated. Nether rushed alongside her rent belly, mending it like a pink zipper. A jug thrust into Dante's view. He took it with one hand, others still clamped to the woman's stomach, and splashed water over her wound, rinsing loose scraps of flesh and pink water to the floor. He removed his hand from her body. The cleansing water revealed clean and unmarked skin. The Norrin man sank to his knees and leaned forward to press his forehead against the woman's. He spoke her name, but she slept. He rose with tears dripping into his beard.
"She's my wife."
Dante poured water over his grimy hands. "And she will be, for years." He nodded to the ranks of wounded.
"Can you help the others?"
"A few. There are limits."
"I humbly ask you to exhaust them."
Dante nodded, stood and shuffled to the next victim, a man so young his beard was still patchy. His right arm extended just above the elbow. A belt knotted it off in a tourniquet. A far easier fix. All Dante had to do was stop the bleeding. He beckoned to the shadows. Mind half submerged in his work, he heard the tall man approach Morn at the wall and bid him to rise. Dante ran his fingers along the severed arm, snagging bone. Scabs followed wherever he touched.
"We'll leave you here," Morn said from beside him. "There is work elsewhere, too."
"Thank you," Dante said. Morn paused mid-step, as if puzzled, then thumped away. The door closed. Sunlight shrank from the windows. The unwounded Norrin lit candles, brought Dante water and stitches and cotton, which he turned to with increasing frequency as the Nether grew stubborn and his head grew sluggish. Still, this work came easier than it ever had, as if the fickle shadows had decided this once that his work was their work as well. He helped heal a dozen villagers before he reached for the Nether, and found it wasn't there. The tall man, his name was Saul, insisted Dante stay at his house, where he was fed seared beef and smoked salmon to
repay his body for its labors.
He ate until he had to be helped to bed. At breakfast, Morn joined him. Saul had found the others last night, fresh off digging a survivor out from beneath a collapsed barn. Today, they planned to continue to clean up wreckage and to patrol the outlying fields against any return of Gascon soldiers. Dante accepted this without complaint. As much as he wanted to continue to Dolandon, he wanted to finish his work here first. He spent the day at the makeshift hospital, tending to the lesser wounds he hadn't had the strength to mend the day before. Norrin came and went to watch him work, moving on in silence. He napped through noon and woke halfway refreshed. At supper time, he rose with Saul's help to move to the next patient and found none remained.
"Come," Saul said. "Ferran wants to see you."
"That's nice," Dante said.
"The woman at the Inn of Three Fingers."
"The one who talks like her words cost a penny apiece?"
"That's her," Saul smiled.
He walked Dante across town. Norrin swung massive hammers into charred walls, bashing them to the ground. Others shoveled wreckage into wheelbarrows. At the Inn of Three Fingers, Ferran offered Dante a single nod. "The clan of the Broken Heron has camped outside town. They're the ones who fought the king's men. Chief's named Hop. If you can keep your eyelids apart, you'll see it tonight." Dante knew he couldn't, so he returned to Saul's to nap again. He woke after dark, sore, but relaxed. The others were just getting in. "No time for dinner," Dante said. "We have a meeting with the clan."
"The clan can wait," Blaze said. "My stomach can't."
Lyra socked him on the arm.
"Eat while you ride, or are you one of those people who has to hang on to the saddle with both hands? Just one. I need the other to cover my eyes."
Saul put together a sack of bread and sausage and showed them the way, leaving his brother to tend to his still-mending wife. A three-quarter moon drenched the grass in silver. 4 miles east from the town, he crossed a stream threaded between two hills, then followed it north for a few hundred yards, until Morn pointed out a trio of fallen sticks.
"Wild sign."
He'd no sooner spoken the word than 5 Norrin warriors emerged from the trees lining the streambed. They peered at Saul, nodded, and led the group further through the trees. The clan of the Broken Heron had no fires or children. They slept and sat beneath the trees, trimming twigs from arrow shafts, sewing ash-rubbed bone and dull bits of metal into cured leather hides. In a moonlit clearing, a man of late middle age laid clean lines of black paint into a circular canvas tied to a wooden stand by leather thongs. He was beardless, the first shaven man Dante had seen since Dolandon. On his stubbled right cheek, a circled R was branded into his skin. He didn't look up from his paint.
"I'm told you're a friend to the Norrin in Plough."
"We're a friend to all Norrin," Dante said.
"Are you, Hop?"
"How can you be a friend to all Norrin? Are you my friend? Are you friend to my enemy clans, too?"
"Yes, in fact. It's my intent to ensure that you and all your enemies survive to keep killing each other for generations to come."
Hop glanced up, mouth half open as he considered Dante.
"You're from Narashtovik."
"And we're here to make both our homelands free."
You think we can't keep ourselves free?
Dante took a step forward, holding the bag of loons.
I don't know. I do know we'll have a better chance if we all stand the same line.
I see.
The branded Norren laid another stroke of paint on his canvas and chuckled in satisfaction.
We'll be fine on our own.
Dante quashed a surge of anger.
Do you know what loons are?
Do you?
As well as how to build them.
He held up the bag of earrings.
We want to give one to each of the clans. We can coordinate movements, attacks, bring all the Norren to bear against the king's armies.
A woman laughed from the darkness. Dante startled. She sat against the trunk of a nearby tree, her remaining teeth white in the moonlight. Hop smiled over his painting.
Okay, he said. You'll take it. Who wouldn't want to fight together in perfect harmony?
He held out his hand. Dante fished a loon from the bag and set it in his palm. It was bone and bluish silver, the color of moonlight.
A drop of blood on the bone will link it to you, Dante said. Let us know whenever you see Gascon troops. With enough warning, we can prevent what happened in Plough from befalling any more towns.
That would be nice, wouldn't it? Hop said. Good night.
The contingent of warriors saw them back across the river. Sol led them back towards town.
Chalk this up to cultural differences, Blaze said. But I didn't get the idea he took that very seriously.
It's hard to say, Morn said. Not hard in the sense that I find the words physically difficult. They are no harder than any other words, but in the sense that Norren can be guarded even between clans. Trying to read their responses to humans is like reading the face of a fish.
At Sol's, Dante tried to raise Cali to tell him the news, but the old man didn't answer. Dante paced, contemplating a second attempt, then realized it was somewhere after 2 a.m. He went to bed, and tried again in the morning. Cali answered within seconds, his tone somewhere between annoyance and amusement.
I take it you made contact with your first clan?
Did Hop reach you? Dante said. What did he say?
I will recount the entire conversation. First, there was a fart, followed by goodbye. Then came a splash. Our chat concluded with an hour of what sounded like rushing water until the loon went dead.
Fart?
Yes, Cali said. That's what I choose to believe anyway, as the alternative would be far worse to contemplate.
Dante rubbed sleep from his eyes.
Maybe a child got a hold of it.
The timbre was notably adult. Of the voice, that is.
Okay. I'll go speak to him and find out what happened.
Do that. Where are you, anyway?
A town called Plough, Dante said. Few miles from the border. Yesterday, Modigan's men burned half of it to the ground.
Plough,
Cali said distantly.
Paper ruffled in the background. Somber's been in Rymark the last 3 days.
That's due west on the borders. 2 days ago he reported a troop heading east. Another left yesterday.
A second wave. Dante glanced at the sunlight through the window. It was at least 9 o'clock, approaching 10.
I'll ride out this minute. If Hop's got any doubts about us, this should put them to the grave.
Morn was already awake. Lyra answered at a knock. Blaze didn't. Dante had to barge into his small room and rip the sheets away from his bed. As they readied, Dante found Sol pulling planks from a charred home down the street. He nodded at Dante's request to act as their guide and led them back into the wild. The clan of the Broken Heron hadn't moved. Sol was intercepted by a man and a woman, a bow shot from the camp. After a brief and somewhat tense discussion, they took Dante alone to Hop, who knelt by the stream, shirtless, washing black paint from his hands, as if he'd kept painting all night. His back was crossed with stitch-thin scars.
"What happened?" Dante said.
Hop smiled at the water.
"I was inspired."
"To drop your loon in the water? Are you sure that's what happened?"
"No. You might have thrown it instead."
Hop took his hands from the water and dried them with a cloth finger by finger.
"I dropped it. I couldn't find it. Have you come to give me another?"
"If you're sure you won't drop it."
Dante reached in his pocket.
"I've got another gift, too. More troops are inbound from the west. They could reach Plough today."
Hop squinted through the sunlight, bouncing from the stream.
"Someone ought to do something about that."
"We'll help, if you'd let us.
We're stronger than we look. I'm one of the strongest necromancers in the land."
"Why are you so keen to help?"
Dante splayed his palms.
"Why is every Norrin in the world so suspicious of that?"
A woman laughed, the same laugh from the night before. Again she leaned against a tree, concealed by the grass and the tree's low boughs.
Dante gasped involuntarily. "Are you scaring me on purpose?"
"An old woman can't rest her back."
"It wouldn't be an issue if she rested more loudly."
She laughed dryly.
"This reminds me of a story. It's a story from very long ago. No one who was there is alive to remember it. Instead, we remember for them. Do you want to hear my story?"
Dante glanced through the trees in the direction of the others.
"Of course.
Everyone should listen as well as you."
She hunched forward, speaking to the space between them.
"And so, long ago, foxes lived in trees."
"Why did they live in trees?"
"To hunt what was there, and to go unseen by the creatures of the ground." "Foxes never fell. When they did fall, they waved their tails and landed softly. This is how one fox was spotted by a passing vought. The vought thought about pouncing, but the fox was already back among the limbs. It sat on its haunches and said, 'There is a fire. Why don't you come down?' The fox flicked its tail and said nothing. The vought sniffed the air. 'Can't you smell the smoke? Get down from that tree, or the smoke you smell will be your own bones.' The fox sniffed, nodded, and said nothing. The vought began to pace in the dirt around the trunk. 'This is unreasonable,' it said. 'I can see the fire there on that hill. What do you think you're going to do?' The fox squinted between the leaves, saw the fire, and said nothing. 'The flames are here,' the vought said. 'I can feel them like a smothering hand. Its smoke is maggots in my nostrils, and you're in the tree. Come down and run with me.' But the fox was gone. The vought ran. The flames pursued."
The old woman lowered her hand, blade-like, to her lap.
"Much later, when the world's changed, the fox changed with it and moved to the ground. This is the end."
"What's a vought?" Dante said.
"I don't know. I've never seen one. They're gone."
"Did they all die in the fire?"
"Why would you think that? Do you think the fire burnt the whole world?"
"Give me another loon," Hop said. "We've got plenty of scouts. We'll tell you if they come to take the town."
Dante smiled and handed him another earring.
"Give us the word, and we'll be there."
The old woman watched keenly as he returned across the stream. Blaze spat out a blade of grass he'd been chewing.
"How'd it go? Did
Did the conversation actually take place via mouths this time?
No. Now, if you'll excuse me, I need a moment with the creek.
I'll be upstream. Far, far upstream.
He took the loon, Dante said. He'll tell us if they see the soldiers. Be ready for a fight.
They returned to Sol's, keeping the horses saddled and their weapons handy. Compared to the racket of industry of the last couple days, the streets were as silent as the wilds. While they'd been out, Sol's brother had spread word another troop might be approaching. The locals had taken to their homes with swords and hammers and spears and axes and hoes.
Hours dragged on.
They ate a light lunch of cheese, melted on flatbread, with greens and herbs plucked from Sol's back garden. Dante killed a few minutes by checking on Sol's wife. She was pale and had lost weight. Her arms were perversely thin for a Norrin. When she sat up in bed, they hung from her shoulders like broken flowers. She spoke and gestured freely, however, and her stomach was pale and cool, free from infection. The loon pulsed a couple hours before sunset. Dante's heart pulsed with it.
"I heard from your chief," Cali said in his ear. "They've located the soldiers. Hop wants you to meet the clan at Farrow Hill at once."
"Where's that?"
"You know, I'm not quite sure. As it turns out, I'm more than 100 miles away. If you'd like to wait 2 or 3 days, perhaps I can ride out and find it for you."
"Did he say anything else?"
"He did not."
"Then I need to go," Dante said. "If you never hear from me again, build me some statues."
He broke the connection. The others stared at him, eyebrows raised. He turned to Sol.
"Where's Farrow Hill?"
"Farrow Hill," he said slowly. "South and southwest, 8 or 10 miles.
"Can you take us?"
"On my back if I have to."
He gestured to his wife's room.
"I still owe you the world."
They mounted up and rode south along a dirt path through the grass. Mice darted away from the clop of hooves. Boar birds squawked from the sparse and thorny trees. Dante rode fast over the rising path. The ground rolled for several miles, then began a steady climb. Every stir of the grass made Dante's eyes dart and his heart skip. The hill leveled off. Ahead, the stark ruins of a stone tower waited in the wind. Behind, the land spread like a full-color map, a sprawl of green grass and the haphazard squares of rich brown farms. Dante could just make out the ribbon of the road. Around it, plough was a tiny cluster of dark mounds. Blaze gazed at the collapsed tower. One wall stood 20 feet high, orange lichen encrusted to the dark stone. Most of it lay in an uneven mound, half buried. Grass and spring's first blue wildflowers sprouted between the cracked stone.
"So where is everybody?" Blaze said.
Dante reached for his loon and made sure it was aligned to Cali.
"You there?" "Yes," Cali said a moment later. "Well, they're not. Have you spoken to Hop again?" "I would have let you know if I had. Can you race him? I just want to make sure we're in the right place."
He switched off.
"That's Farrow Tower,"
Sol pointed.
"There's only one, and it's on Farrow Hill."
Dante stared over the distant plain.
"This feels wrong."
"They probably figured we could win the battle by ourselves," Blaze said. "Honestly, I can't blame them."
"I'm sure Hop farting into the loon was just a sign of respect."
"I don't know why we're even wasting time out here. We should march straight to Setevan, storm the palace, carve a tunnel through everyone who gets in our way, and slap the king with a wet glove until he makes Mourn king."
"I don't want to be king," Mourn said.
"That's all right."
Blaze wiped wind-blown grit from his eyes.
"You can see the crown to me."
Wind rustled. Birds chirped. 3 minutes later, Dante's loon pulsed.
"What did he say?"
"He's not responding," Kelly said. "Do you think something's wrong?"
"I don't know.
There's at least 40 warriors in their clan. Unless they all fell down the same well, I'd expect one of them to have made it out here. I'll inform you the moment I hear a thing. I know how you get when things are uncertain. The link blanked out.
Dante stared down the hill, straining his ears so hard they rang with strange tones. He began to sweat under his doublet.
Blaze trotted around the crest of the hill and found nothing but open grass.
As the sun dropped, the wind grew steady and cold. Dante felt sick, tingly, his head overrun by questions and doubts.
"What exactly did Hob say to you this morning?"
Moen said.
"Nothing. That he'd take the loon and scout for the soldiers." "That's all."
"That's all."
He blew into his hands to warm them. "There was an old woman with him. She told me the story of the fox and the vault."
A frown unfolded beneath Moen's beard. "How does that story go?"
"I don't really feel like swapping campfire tales just now."
"Just tell me how it went. Please."
Dante gave him a look. His eyes were anxious, guarded. Dante sighed and repeated the story of the querulous vault and the silent fox. At the end, Morn winced like he'd just taken a big bite of soup and chomped down on an unexpected bit of bone.
"We should go back to town."
"What is it?"
"That story wasn't a story." "Well, it was. It told about a thing that happened, but it was also a test."
"Of his patience," Blaze said. "It didn't even have an ending."
Morn shook his shaggy head. "Because there is no ending. The fox can't trust the vault, and it doesn't need to, because this isn't the first fire it's seen. It already knows the signs of fire and what to do when it comes. And long after the vaults have died or gone away, foxes live on, because they know when to change."
"Oh," Dante said.
"You see?"
"Right. All I see is two cryptic assholes," Blaze said.
"The Norren are like the fox," Dante said. "I don't know if the Vought is Narashtovic or Gask or humans in general. Either way, they can't trust us and don't need us."
"So, Hop sent us on a Vought hunt," Blaze said. "Just for a laugh. Or to get us away from something."
"Lyle's balls," Dante said.
The sun near the horizon, piercing and red.
"We'd better get back to town."
Twilight slowed their return. It was full dark by the time they rode into Plough. Men jogged down the street armed with bows and spears and pitchforks, whooping and laughing. Saul pulled aside one of his neighbors to get the news. The clan of the Broken Heron had ambushed a detachment of the king's men miles north of town. Not a single red-shirted soldier had survived the skirmish.
"Is it always going to be like this?" Dante said. "We come with aid and they send us off in the wrong direction and laugh behind their hands. What will they do when an army of 10,000 sweeps through the hills?"
"You must understand," Morn said. "Who are you to a clan? Do you look any different from the king?"
"Then let's move on. Try a different group. They can't all feel this way." "We could waste our time," Blaze said, "or we can try something that'll work. You've got a better idea."
"It's very simple. We stop being human and start being Norren."
"I'll see what I can do." Dante splayed his hand, grabbed up a fistful of nether, and flicked it at Blaze. "Kablam!" The shadows flashed in a shower of sparks. "Oh dear, it didn't work. Should I try again?"
"If you're having fun," Blaze said, "but my plan's a little simpler."
He grinned at Morn. "I think we should join a clan."
Chapter 18 Dante shook his head,
That is among the dumbest things you've ever said, and I once heard you ask what a female rooster was called.
Blaze quirked his mouth skeptically.
I would rather not know that than have to grow up in a place where it's common knowledge.
Like where?
The world?
Like your hometown.
Not that you can call two cottages facing each other a town. Anyway, it's not like you can tell what sex they are by looking at them.
It's a chicken!
Anyway, what do you know?
Blaze waved his hand for peace. Morn, is this dumb, or is it, in fact, brilliantly smart?
Morn's eyes shifted. If you could join a clan, you would be taken much more seriously by many other clans.
Can we join a clan? Dante said.
To my knowledge, which is not exhaustive, and is in fact quite limited, when you consider the small fraction of Norrin I've known personally, or heard reliable information about, during my as-yet brief life on this—
Will you get on with it?
Morn folded his arms. No human ever has.
Dante turned to Blaze. You see? Dumb. Dumb in the way of a rooster with its head cut off.
Oh, that doesn't mean anything, Blaze said. Look then, how does a Norrin join another clan? You guys must marry outsiders now and then.
I'm not marrying a Norrin, Dante said.
Is it the hair? Morn said. Norrin women aren't any hairier than human women. Not so far as I've been able to tell, anyway.
It's not a species thing. I'm not marrying anyone.
Women everywhere will be happy to hear it, Blaze said. Now, will you answer the question, Morn?
Well, he said, there is marriage. There is also a debt system wherein if you can't repay what you owe to a member of another clan, and you're not well-liked enough within your own clan to be worth starting a feud over, then you may be offered to the other clan as a temporary slave, with the right to join that new clan once your period of slavery has concluded.
How long does that take? Dante said.
2 or 3 years, typically.
We'll just ask Modigan to hold off the invasion until then. He seems reasonable.
That's it, Blaze said. What if you just like some other clan more?
Well, you could simply ask to join, Morn said. A clan can do whatever it likes with itself, can't it?
Blaze threw up his hands. Why didn't you start with that?
Why don't we skip all this? Dante said.
Why don't we just go to the clan of the Nine Pines and get their backing to distribute the looms?
I'd rather not, Morn said.
Why not?
Because they might kill me.
Well, that seems a bit reactionary, Blaze said.
I abandoned the clan in time of war. It would be their right.
The clan of the Broken Heron is right here, Lyra spoke up. What can it hurt to ask them?
This could work, Morn said. Right now, no one takes you seriously. If you were adopted by a clan, many others would suddenly discover that what you have to say is worth listening to.
Fine, Dante said.
Down the street, torches whirled. Norrin laughed in their booming voices. 4 men heaved around a corner, leaning forward as if into a gale, lifting their knees high as if wading through water. Taut ropes stretched behind them. Torchlights splashed over the bodies of 4 red-shirted soldiers bouncing through the muddy streets.
But if Hop says no, we move on. Without argument.
Dante told Sol to go home to his wife, and led the others through the hills to the stream. Even in darkness, he found it and the campsite readily enough, but the clan was nowhere in sight. They'd left nothing behind but fish bones and latrines. Dante rode along the stream, 1/2 mile in both directions, and found nothing but grass and trees and moonlight. Shortly before midnight, he returned to Sol's, where the looming Norrin opened the door and promised to help them find the Broken Herons in the morning. He came through.
Following the slaughter of the king's soldiers, the clan had relocated several miles south to recuperate and hunt fresh fields. Warriors snored in the morning sunlight. Those who were awake came to stop Dante's band with spears and swords, but on the word of Morn and Sol, they were allowed once more to see Hop, who sat on a broad rock by the stream, flicking a lightweight hook above the surface of the water. The chieftain didn't turn. He sighed through his beard.
"Why don't you save us all the trouble and throw that sack of yours straight in the stream?"
"We're not here about the loons," Dante said.
"Then are you here to congratulate me?"
"Yeah, hell of a victory," Blaze said. "It was so impressive it's inspired us to join your clan."
Hop laughed, his thick middle bulging under his deerskins.
"I don't think you're tall enough. Maybe we could hang you from your ankles for a month."
Morn shuffled his feet and gazed at the bed of grass beside the stream bank.
"They are, regrettably, serious."
Hop gazed between their somber faces.
"You are, aren't you? What do you even know of the Clan of the Broken Heron?"
"That you destroyed a troop of the king's soldiers with minor losses," Dante said. He glanced at the old woman who sat motionless beside a tree.
"That even though I couldn't hear it, you were kind enough to tell me how to be a better friend."
The woman laughed softly. Hop smiled slowly.
"And what makes you worthy of the clan?"
"That's not for me to decide."
"Are we finally getting somewhere?" the old woman said.
Hop touched the R branded on his cheek.
"No, I see no claim to our clan. No right to even ask it."
"We were there when the Clan of the Nine Pines freed the Green Lake from Lord Cassander," Dante said. "We brought peace between the Clan of the Golden Field and the farmers of Tatornin, securing bread for your people against the upcoming war."
"Damn, that sounds outright heroic," Blaze said. "Not to mention the 4 years we've spent bringing the territories food, silver, and weapons. Put it like that, and you could say we're already a de facto clan of our own."
"Oh, that you are the cause of this conflict in the first place," Hop said. Dante tipped back his chin.
"Would you rather go on as slaves to the king?"
Hop smiled tightly, distorting the R branded on his cheek. He nodded downstream. The creek ran straight for hundreds of feet, gushing around boulders beneath the canopy of willows. Hop pointed to a rue tree just before the stream bent and disappeared behind the willows.
"See that rue? Swim to it, and you can join the clan."
Blaze began to unbutton his doublet.
"Is that it?" "Without taking a single breath of air."
The beardless Norrin raised his shrubby brows.
"Think your devotion to the clan will support you after your air runs out?"
"Well, that's just obstinate." Blaze shrugged out of his doublet and set to work on his belt.
"What are you doing?" Lyra said.
"Going for a dip. With my head underwater, I won't have to hear any more of this nonsense."
"That must be 300 yards. No one can swim that in one breath."
"We'll see about that." He finished with his belt and plonked down in the grass to unlace his boots. Dried mud crusted the fraying laces.
"Anyway, what's there to lose? If I can't do it, I'll pop up for a few deep breaths, we all share a good cry, and then we move on."
Lyra turned to Hop with a look that could slice a falling feather.
"Your test is absurd. What will it prove?"
Hop stretched his arms behind his back, shoulders bustling.
"Whether he's got gills."
Blaze flung his boots at Dante and stood to shed his pants.
"Keep those dry. There's nothing worse than walking around with squelchy boots."
He glanced at Hop.
"Well, gonna watch me. If this is on my honor, why don't you turn your back and I'll holler when I'm there?"
Hop grinned, wolfish,
and stood, knees popping. He gestured palm up at the stream.
"You've got spirit, don't you? I'm suddenly wishing I'd gone with a task that was remotely possible."
"Your loss."
"Or mine if I bang my head on one of those rocks."
Reduced to his underwear, Blaze waded into the stream, grimacing as the hill-fed cataract washed over his calves. Another step plunged him to his thighs. He took three long breaths, swelling his muscled chest and bulging his belly. He sighed down at the swirling currents.
"The balls are always the worst, aren't they?"
Before anyone could answer, he lunged forward, diving into the stream. Lyra swore. Hop strode along the banks. In confusion, Dante jogged after him, scanning the foaming water for a hint of Blaze. For some seconds he saw nothing but the constant rush of water, opaqued by turbulence, rippling over half-hidden stones. Splashing pulled his gaze downstream. 30 yards away, far past where Dante had been tracking, Blaze burst from the surface, keeping his face below the water as his arms and legs churned. The current pulled him along, doubling his natural speed. Dante sped to a light run to keep pace. Hop, Lyra, and Morn thumped beside him. Three warriors, who had been listening from a distance, sprinted to catch up. A boulder cleaved the stream dead ahead. Somehow, Blaze spotted it through the roiling chaos of bubbles and water, cutting along its left flank. A quarter of the way to the Rue's Y-shaped trunk, the stream narrowed and deepened, submerging any rocks. Blaze cruised onward. Dante tore through the grass, splashing in the reeds. Halfway to the tree, Blaze slowed, legs faltering. As if remembering where he was, he pushed ahead, thrashing at the hurtling water. Dante realized he'd been holding his own breath. He let it go in a whoosh, tasting sweet spring air. The stream curved gently. Blaze drifted toward the right bank, his bare back a splash of white atop the dark water. 50 yards from the Rue, he stopped moving.
"Aron's mercy!" Lyra shouted.
She charged forward, angling toward the bank, stripping off her doublet. Blaze floated on, borne on the current. Dante rushed after Lyra and grabbed her arm.
"Stop! He's almost there!"
She whirled, mouth agape, and punched him in the jaw. He staggered into the damp grass. She rushed on, hopping as she yanked at her boots. Dizzy and nauseous, Dante lumbered to his feet and ran after her, overtaken by Morn, Hop, and the three warriors. Just before the Rue, Lyra slogged into the water, fully clothed except her bare feet. She dived into the stream and thrashed towards Blaze. Beside him, she threw her arm over his chest and pulled his head from the torrent. They banged into a rock, spinning crazily, disappearing under a white flush of water. Dante yelled. Their heads popped back up. Lyra sputtered. Blaze hung limp. She paddled for shore, sweeping downstream. A few feet from the bank, she found her footing and hauled Blaze toward the thicket of reeds. Dante splashed into the stream. Her face was white, sopping, furious. She tensed as if to punch Dante again, then pivoted her hip to sling Blaze's loose body forward. Dante ducked his shoulder under Blaze's arm and dragged him onto dry land. Lyra flopped Blaze on his back, his arms slapped into the grass. She bore down on his pale chest, pumping it repeatedly, hard enough to crack a rib.
"What the hell are you doing?" Dante said.
"What we do when men drowned in the islands."
She pumped again, then sat back, heaving, hair straggled down her face.
"Come on!"
Blaze lay cold and still and white. In a panic, Dante called the nether from beneath the leaves and stones, but he had nowhere to send it, no wounds to knit, no blood to staunch. His ears roared. 2 minutes ago, Blaze had been joking, grinning. Lyra gave his chest another series of compressions. His head rolled, mouth half open, tongue pale as a cave fish.
Lyra yelled, a rising cry that could split the world. She hammered her fist against Blaze's chest. Water gouted from his mouth. He coughed, chest racking, limbs flapping. Lyra laughed.